Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. And as we get closer and closer to the 2021 NFL draft, we're trying to bring you as many different perspectives, as much information and analysis as we can about draft prospects and about your New York Giants. And here to help me do that today is longtime NFL draft analysts. And I know people hate it when I use the word long time. I probably shouldn't do that because it makes people feel old. But NFL draft analyst Rob Rang, currently working for Fox Sports and doing the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Rob, it's been a long time since you and I chatted.
It has been, but I'm eager to resume our long-standing relationship, Ed, and talk a little bit of Giants football and 2021 NFL draft.
All right. So you are currently, you know, doing some writing, doing some work for Fox Sports these days, and you recently released, I don't know, was it today, yesterday, the three-round mock draft that you released?
Yeah, I wrote it yesterday and it got published today. So, So just here in the last couple of a few hours here.
All right. So let's pick that apart. let's give you a hard time.
Yep.
All right. Let's go through your three picks for the Giants. At 11, you gave them Kwity Paye. Yep. And you know, that's looking at I think Jaylen Waddle's off the board there. I think the offensive linemen were off the board there, you know, being Slater and Penei Sewell off the board there. I'm going to tell you that I'm not fond of Kwity Paye at 11 for the Giants, and I'll tell you why, and then you can give me your reasoning for making that pick. I see the player. I see a guy that I think he's a high motor guy, a guy that is a little bit similar to Justin Tuck in the fact that you might be able to move him inside and rush him from inside. I see a guy that's going to be a good NFL player, but I'm not sure he's a dynamic bend the edge guy, nor am I sure with a Giants team that they play, you know, they play some 4-3. They're hybrid. Sometimes they're two down linemen with two guys standing up, but they're base 4-3. And I look at Kwity Paye and I'm just not sure he fits because I see him as a base 4-3. I don't see him as a guy that you want to play a lot of snaps standing up. So with all of that, tell me what you see about Kwity Paye and tell me, you know, tell me why I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, I think that you certainly know your Giants a lot better than I do. What I would say is with Kwity Paye, I see a guy who I personally believe does have a little bit more versatility. You mentioned Justin Tuck before. I don't know that he is the same, you know, he's not as tall and lean as Justin Tuck. He doesn't have the same arm length, but he actually reminds me of a guy that I remember watching a lot from Michigan that wound up in Seattle and now is a member of the Kansas City Chiefs, and Frank Clark. And I really like the heaviness of his hands and the way that he is able to kind of jolt the would-be blockers and be able to disengage. I do think that he can slide inside and play that defensive tackle position. And so to me, that gives him a little bit of the positional versatility to be able to play all up and down the defensive line. I also think that when you look at the Giants and the fact that I believe they had 41 sacks a year ago, that looks impressive on paper until you subtract the 11 and a half that Leonard Williams had a year ago. And so to me, it makes the Giants very, I wouldn't want to say one dimensional, but basically they have one superstar and I think that they need a little bit more. And so I do think that adding another defensive lineman, another pass rusher is important. It may wind up not being Kwity Paye, but I think that the depth on the offensive line is such that you could go for one of these defensive linemen in the first round and then be able to come back in the second or third round and be able to get an offensive lineman. Because as you were kind of leading up to the Giants at number 11. I do have Rashawn Slater from Northwestern falling a couple of picks after the Giants. I have him going number 13 overall to the Chargers. So I think that when you look at the investments that the Giants have made, especially with the rookie last year, the offensive tackle, Andrew Thomas, then I just think I have a hard time justifying another early selection on the offensive line, especially given the depth of this year's class. So again, I think Quiddy Pay to me checks a lot of those boxes. And that's why I thought that he was a solid selection for them at number 11, if he is indeed available at that spot.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I realized as we were talking that I misspoke. You did leave Rashawn Slater, you know, on the board at 11. So he was there. And I love Slater. I think Slater is a really natural fit for the Giants. The problem is if Andrew Thomas is staying at left tackle. They love Matt Parrott, who they drafted in the third round a year ago. I don't know how you feel about Parrott, although I thought he played fairly well in his limited snaps a year ago. I think it's hard to justify drafting a guy as much as I might do it if Slater's available. It's difficult to justify drafting a guy who's probably a starting guard in 2021, you know, with the 11th pick.
Yeah.
You do agree with that?
I do. And that's my biggest issue here is that, again, because the Giants, I am a fan of Matt Parrott and I am a fan of Andrew Thomas as well. I do expect a significant, improvement. And I thought that Andrew Thomas, at least nationally, has gotten a little bit of a bad rap for struggling as a rookie. I think that he played better than at least the national perception. And I think that he will make big strides in his second year. He certainly did that at Georgia, and I expect him to do the same in the NFL. So to me, that is the argument there, is that I just don't see the justification. I don't see the value in selecting a guard at number 11 overall, when I think there's a lot of other good guards that you might be able to find in the second round or the third round for that matter. And so again, with Quiddy Pay, I think that the talent along the offensive line is such that that it is deep enough that the difference between the first couple of players and the next couple of players is not nearly as wide, in my opinion, as it is among the defensive line. I think that in the defensive line, the pass rushers, you've got guys like Pay, like Rousseau, Jalen Phillips from Miami as well. And then after that, I think that there is a big gap there. And that's where I think the Giants might be looking to, and other clubs might be looking to take full advantage of.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Dane Brugler over at The Athletic did his 7-round mock draft this week, and his pick at 11 for the Giants was Vera Tucker, the offensive lineman out of USC, who, again, a lot like Slater, really good player, guy that I know would be a starter for the Giants and would make the Giants better. But I actually reviewed that draft at Big Blue View, and I actually looked at it. And I could find, going into even the third round of the mock that he did, I found a half a dozen guys who I thought you could have taken at 76 who would compete for starting guard jobs in the NFL as rookies. So, and I think that in itself might devalue taking a Slater or a Vera Tucker at 11.
Well, I agree. And that's a big part of my rationale here. I think that Dane does a great job. I'm certainly not questioning that interior offensive line is a concern for the Giants. I think especially when you have a young quarterback in Daniel Jones, who is mobile. But I think that at the same time, you want him, because he does not have an elite arm, in my opinion, you want him to be able to step into his throws. When he is able to use his core and step into his throws, I think the velocity is just fine. But if he is unable to do so, then that's where you start to see some of the concerns with the pure arm strength, at least in my opinion. And so, again, I think that the adding a guard early would make some sense. I'm not quite as high on Elijah Vera Tucker as apparently Dane is or some others are. I think he's a good player. I think that he absolutely walks into the NFL. And I love the positional versatility that he and Slater provide. There, no question about it. They are guys that can play that tackle position, that can play guard. I think that both of them have the intelligence and the kind of square build to be able to slide inside at center if they really wanted to. But at the same time, again, I think that there's good positional, I think there's good depth at that position this year. And then with Vera Tucker specifically, I would say that if you watch his tape against Oregon, the Pac-12 championship game, now the kid that Oregon, Kayvon Thibodeau, is a special guy. He's going to be a top five pick next year, in my opinion. But at the same time, he was eaten alive by some of Thibodeau's speed. And so just considering some of the talent that you see along the defensive line in the NFC East, that would frighten me a little bit. And so again, that's one of the reasons why I personally have Elijah Vera Tucker, dropping a little bit later down into the first round. I do have him as a first round pick, but a number 11 overall to me is pretty rich.
Before we move completely off number 11, I want to throw a name at you and see how you feel about whether or not this is a player you could justify seeing the Giants take at 11. Azeez Ojulari from Georgia. When I look at the Giants and when I look at Ojulari, I don't know if Ojulari's going to be a 10 or 12 sack a year guy in the NFL. I think he's a guy maybe a little bit like a Leonard Williams, who doesn't year after year after year put up big numbers, but can impact the pocket. But what I love about Ojulari is I see a guy who can rush the passer pretty well. I see a guy who's got the ability, you know, to hold the edge. He's also got the ability to stand up and drop, mm-hmm. which when I look at the Giants and I look at the multiple things that they do, I like that skill set. I also happen to love the fact that he's still 20 years old. Exactly. So I guess my question is Ojulari a guy you could justify taking at 11?
I can. I think that, to me, there is not a one dominant pass rusher in this draft class, in my opinion. I think that there are a number of players that you have to kind of fit the player to your specific scheme. As we talked about previously, the Giants do run multiple different alignments. And Ojulari, I think because of his positional versatility, his ability to drop back in space, as you mentioned, he's got those really long arms. And so even though he's kind of a shorter guy, that he is able to lock out would-be blockers. And he does have that burst. He does have better bend, in my opinion, than Quiddy Pay has. And as you said, 20 years old, and that's very, very intriguing. For a guy who came in to sign on with Georgia, tears his ACL, misses his first season, then the next 2 years winds up leading the Bulldogs in sacks each of the next two seasons. To me, that is a testament to his athletic ability. It's a testament to his heart. And so I think that that is exactly the type of player that every NFL club is looking for. So to me, I'm nervous. If I was an NFL team, I'd be nervous about investing a top 20 pick in any of these pass rushers, because we're talking about a lot of guys who have a great deal of potential, but only a few who have much production. Ojulari being one of the best in the production range. And then because he's a younger player, you still are able to kind of project even more from him. But at the same time, it is spooky, because when you look at the Georgia Bulldogs, they have an awful lot of talent in the back end as well. And so he certainly had a few more opportunities to get to the quarterback, just because of the fact that they have, three or four, five defensive backs that might wind up being drafted this year, including a couple of them who I think have a chance to go in the top 32.
Right. I think there's at least three. There's Tyson Campbell, Eric Stokes, and is it DJ Daniel? And yep, I might DJ be missing Daniels, somebody.
The corner.
Richard LeCount, yep. The safety.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, so you're right. There's four of them. That's that's something I really hadn't thought about, was the quality of that secondary at Georgia. Anyway, Rob, let's move on to your second round pick. At 42, you have the Giants taking Liam Eichenberg, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame. And my first question about Eichenberg, I had one of the guys on the podcast recently from SB Nation's Notre Dame website, which is called One Foot Down. And he was adamant that Notre Dame left tackles get drafted in the first round, period. They get drafted in the first round. Eichenberg's a Notre Dame left tackle. He's a first round draft pick. And I'm like, well, you know, none of the scouting reports say he's a first round draft pick. So you tell me, is this a guy, is at 42 for Eichenberg, is that a fall or is that the right value for him?
I think that the mid second round is about where Liam Eichenberg should go. I don't believe that he is going to go in the first round, as I just said, and I don't think that he's going to be an NFL left tackle. I think he's going to be a guard, maybe even a center. He's got 32 and a half inch arms. And so he's got nice feet. He's got good anticipation. He is a physical player. He's a very durable player. And with all due respect to the Notre Dames and their tackles, I mean, sure, when you have the Ronnie Stanleys and the Mike McGlinchey's of the world, and they've wound up playing very well in the NFL for their respective clubs. Yeah, that's an impressive track record. I'm a big fan of Liam Eichenberg. I'm a big fan of the rest of Notre Dame's offensive line as well. I think that Eichenberg can walk into the NFL and compete for a starting job. I just have my concerns about the fact that all he played at Notre Dame was left tackle. And again, because he doesn't have elite feet, and he certainly doesn't, he has average at best length, then I think that position is going to most likely be inside. And because he did not do that at Notre Dame, that has to make you a little bit nervous. But I do believe that he's a good football player, and I think that he's going to be a starting NFL guy. I think that he's got, again, not only the physical traits, but the toughness, the durability, the technique. He was beaten at times last year. And because of that arm length issue, in my opinion, that's one of the reasons why I think that he has as many holding penalties as he has. But I think that you can kind of, mitigate those concerns as far as the speed rushers, where he would get himself a little bit off balance and have to grab cloth. I think if you slide him inside the guard position, then you don't have those same kind of concerns. And I love his kind of burly frame and obviously the level of competition that he faced. To me, those are all reasons why I think that he could come into the NFL and be successful pretty early in his NFL career.
So you've basically already answered this, but you're drafting him at 42 as a guard, as a player to put into that competition with Will Hernandez and Shane Lemieux and the veteran free agent they signed, Zach Fulton, to see who comes out of there as the Giants starting guards.
Yeah, basically. I think that's where he projects best, in my opinion. I remain a big fan of frankly, all three of those guards. I was a huge fan of Will Hernandez coming out of UTEP. I just think that he is more of a guy that needs to be a run blocking kind of a maven. I mean, he's got that's his game, in my opinion. It's just the raw power at the point of attack. And with the Giants, throwing the ball as much as they have, and obviously the loss of Saquon Barkley a year ago, I really think that is not putting Hernandez quite as much in the position where he can have as much success. And so he is a player that if he does struggle, then I have to acknowledge that he was a guy that I was very high on. And if that's a miss by the Giants, then it's a miss by me as well.
All right. And just while we're on the subject, what is your take on Shane Lemieux? I mean, I really like the kid as a fifth round pick. Giants fans were pretty excited. The pick was very well liked, you know, as a day three, you know, round five kind of pick. I love the physicality. I love the run blocking, but his pass blocking last year, from what we could see, his pass blocking was just abysmal. Could you have predicted that? And is that, I mean, in your mind, with a with a kid like that? Is that always going to be an issue for him?
I think that Lemieux, because I live in the Pacific Northwest, that I had an opportunity to watch a lot of Shane Lemieux. And I actually went the last 2 years, went down to Oregon's practices throughout the summer. Was there primarily, of course, to focus in on the quarterback, Justin Herbert. But one of the things I heard over and over and over again is, besides the freakish talent that is Penei Sewell, that the alpha in the room along the offensive line was Shane Lemieux. And so to me, what that says, especially when you have the head coach that at Oregon, who is a former offensive line guy, all that kind of stuff, to me, that is exactly what you're looking for. It's kind of like I talked about before, Andrew Thomas and the improvement I expect from him in his second year. I think you're going to see that from Shane Lemieux as well. At the same time, I also would point out that the Pac-12 has not been as good at producing dominant defensive linemen in the past. I think, frankly, that a lot of Pac-12 offensive linemen come into the NFL and they are just shocked by the size, the physicality, the speed, that, you know, that just that huge jump in competition they're facing. So I do expect Lemieux to be much better in year two. But at the same time, I also think that he was a guy that, just based on tape, I thought that he played a little high at times, and just his pad level. And then he relied, in my opinion, on his initial jolt to be able to kind of move people at the line of scrimmage. And I wanted to see a little bit more playing on the balls of his feet and kind of sliding laterally left to right. I think that's something that he could improve upon.
All right. Hey, before we move off the second round, I jotted down a couple of notes of some of the guys that were still on the board, you know, with your pick at 42. And a guy that I ask everybody I talk to about is Purdue wide receiver Rondale Moore. And what I said the other day to an analyst I was talking to, and I think I was actually talking to Matt Waldman of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and we were going through, we did kind of a deep dive into some of the wide receivers. And I said, look, when it comes to two guys, you know, and Tutu Atwell and Rondale Moore, I simply don't get it. I just don't get it. You know, Atwell is a different story because, you know, he weighs about 150. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but Rondale Moore specifically, I see what he did against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I see all of that. But this is a guy who's basically been hurt for 2 years. When I look at his film, you know, half of 2019, couple games in 2020, I really don't see a guy who's ever open unless they just throw him the ball out on the wing and let him try to run with it. So am I crazy? Do I not see something that you see or that the rest of the NFL sees? You know, what's your take on Rondale Moore?
I like Rondale Moore, but I think that the Ed that you and I see things very similarly in that he is a player that, and there's a lot of players in this class, in my opinion, that slot receiver types. I think that you have to kind of, you know, almost create opportunities for them. Now, once they do have those opportunities, I think that's where Rondale Moore is dynamic. And Atwell, to a lesser extent as well, obviously the straight line speed that Atwell possesses, you can be a 150, as you said. I think he was, you know, I think he measured in exactly 155 pounds. I mean, that's frightening to me. I don't want a punter that's 155 pounds, you know, but at the same time, guys that can run 4.3 are obviously rare. And to me, with Rondale Moore, what's exciting is he does have that 4.3 speed. He also has the, you know, the 600 pound squat. I mean, he's got the 42.5-inch vertical. He's just about as explosive as a player as there is in this draft class, in my opinion, almost regardless of position. And so I just love the ability to run away from people, the physicality, be able to drop his shoulder into defenders and be able to kind of bulldoze as if he was a much bigger receiver, the competitiveness that he has shown. At the same time, the lack of durability that you cited, the fact that he was not used as a traditional slot receiver. He is not going to come in as a very sharp route runner. You have to kind of create those opportunities for him. I think that some NFL teams are very much interested in doing exactly that. But those teams that are traditional, then they are not going to be nearly as high on a player like Rondale Moore. So to me, he's one of those players that I think his stock is going to be fluctuating much more so among different NFL teams and different evaluators than most of the other wide receivers in this draft class, just because, again, there is so much projection to his game.
All right. And your third round pick is Thomas Graham, cornerback out of Oregon at 76 for the Giants. Now, Graham, I will admit, is not a player that I'm really, really familiar with. I do love the idea for the Giants somewhere in the middle of the draft, 3-4, one of their sixth round picks. If they haven't addressed it already, I love the idea of adding another corner. To me, especially a guy who might be able to be a third outside corner, because I'm not optimistic that Sam Beal's ever actually going to get on the field. And Isaac Yiadom is a guy who's limited. He did okay last year if the Giants protected him in a soft zone, but they, you know, they've got a Dory Jackson, they've got Bradbury, but they could use, you know, a young developmental guy there. So just tell me a little bit about Graham.
Yeah, I think that with Graham, you're talking about a guy who has speed, has ball skills. I think this is more about the positional concern. I have some concerns about cornerback for the Giants, and I think that they are going to be addressing that position somewhere in the middle rounds, if not earlier. Because if they have a Patrick Surtain, fall in their lap at number 11, I think that has to be a consideration just because the player is good enough. With Thomas Graham, I appear to be a little bit higher on him than a lot of people do. I'd argue that I probably watched a little bit more tape on him, just over his career than a lot of folks have. The same point that I tried to make before about Azeez Ojulari, the edge rusher from Georgia, and I mentioned the talented secondary that he was playing in front of. That's one of my concerns with Graham and Graham at the cornerback position. Is he had a terrific terrific safety in Javon Holland behind him, at least until this past year. And I didn't see the drop off in Thomas Graham's play that I expected, frankly, with the lack of the playmaking safety behind him, Javon Holland opting out on the season. I thought the Graham still played very, very well for a team that wound up winning the Pac-12. And so to me, I think that he is a corner that maybe some of the other analysts out there are sleeping on a little bit. I do think that he's got a chance to be a top 100 selection. I do believe that he has a chance to be a starter, whether he's a little shorter than I'd prefer at the outside. But I think that he has the grit to be able to slide inside at the nickel cornerback spot. He actually reminds me of a little bit of another kind of West Coasty cornerback that wound up becoming a big time player for the Buffalo Bills, especially in the playoffs this last year, Teron Johnson, who played his college ball at Weber State. I see a guy who doesn't have the great size, doesn't have elite speed, but is a playmaker and is a guy who just has the sticky fingers and has the instincts that I think project very well to the NFL. And frankly, one of the other things I think that we may see in the draft this year, and I don't know this is going to happen with the Giants, but I've been trying to talk to NFL scouts a little bit about trying to get a feel for the difference between this year and last year and prior years in the draft. And one of the things, of course, is that there was no combine this year. Then most scouts that, were allowed to go to team or to games or to see teams in person, then they were really close or really short little snapshot kind of opportunities to see them. And so what I think that we may see happen this year is I think that we may see certain programs or certain teams that draft players from the same programs that they've had some success with in the past, or that teams that kind of draft players from teams that they just drafted from the year before, and they've got some buy-in. They know some of the players they're on their current NFL roster, and they're going to ask them, what do you think about this player? When I was trying to kind of read the tea leaves and see some of the cornerbacks who I thought made some sense for the Giants, I wonder if the fact that New York has had some success drafting some of these players out in the West Coast. And again, Thomas Graham, in my opinion, fills a position of concern for the club. I just thought that he made some sense there as a player that might be interesting to the Giants at number 76 overall.
Cool. Now I have to go. Now I have to go do some last minute draft studying. All right. Hey, Rob, last question for you. I am firmly convinced. Now the Giants have a pick at the fourth round at 116. They do not have a fifth round pick courtesy of the much debated Leonard Williams trade, which I think has worked out just fine for the Giants, all things considered.
I would say so.
They have 2 6th round picks. I think it's 196 and 201. They have Saquon Barkley coming back off the ACL. They signed Devontae Booker, and I'm still scratching my head at the amount of money that they gave Devontae Booker to be a backup running back. But we're not really here to debate that. I am firmly convinced that they will at some point, if they can find value in round 4 or round 6, that they will add to that running back room. Otherwise, they'll be out there this summer looking for somebody that's still free or somebody that gets cut just to add some depth. So it's kind of a long-winded way of saying, give me, you know, 2 or 3 day 3 running backs that you think could provide some really good value, some really good play.
Well, it's funny. You know, we were just talking about players in the West Coast. I don't think get enough attention. And I just mentioned the Oregon Duck. I'll mention the Oregon State Beaver and Jamar Jefferson. You know, he's a short, squatty guy. You know, he's in that 5'8", 5'9", 215 to 220 pounds, depending on when you weighed him in. But at the same time, I love the balance through contact. I love the toughness. I thought that when Oregon State played its toughest opponents over the years, and not just in the Pac-12, when they went to play Ohio State, Jamar Jefferson played some of his best games. And so to me, he's a really intriguing player. Khalil Herbert from Virginia Tech, an East Coast guy that you guys may be more familiar with, is a similar player who really popped this year for the Hokies after originally beginning his career at Kansas. And so the fact that you have a back that you know kind of saved his best for last, I think that is something that always intrigues NFL teams. I think that, in my opinion, you know, going back to Devontae Booker and what I remember of him, you know, being another kind of somewhat westy coast guy at Utah, I saw a back that, again, had the good balance through contact. So I think that's something that clearly the Giants are prioritizing at the running back position. I still think that he is a significant drop off, not only in terms of just pure juice and compared to Saquon Barkley, but also is nowhere near the receiver that Barkley is. And so I almost wonder if a guy like a Kylan Hill from a Mississippi State, because he does have terrific hands out of the backfield, he might be another one that would make some sense on day 3 as a possible change of pace back for the Giants.
What about a guy like Jared Patterson, the kid from Buffalo?
I like Patterson. It's just we're talking about a completely different type of guy, and that he's just as slim as he is. But he has the jets to be able to make the big play. And just I don't know that he is going to make it to the to the later rounds. You know, I think that he might be available in the 4th round, but because he has this different element of straight line speed to him, because he's a pretty young player that doesn't have the he still has a lot more tread on his tires, so to speak, than a lot of these other backs, then I think that he again has a chance to go up a little bit earlier in this draft, and therefore may not be in play for a team like the Giants that frankly I think has some other concerns that are bigger than at the running back position, assuming of course that the Giants feel really good about Saquon Barkley coming back from his knee injury.
All right. Hey, Rob, we could do this. We could probably do this for hours, you know, and I know I would learn a lot, but I think at this point, I think that's a pretty good spot for us to wrap it up. So why don't you tell folks where they can find you on Twitter, where they can find where they can find your work these days, where they can hear your podcasts and all that good stuff.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah. So of course, my name is Rob Rang, and I've been covering the NFL draft for a little bit more than 20 years now. You can find most of the draft information that I'm writing now, right before the draft, at foxsports.com. I also write above me here in the screen is the Lindy's NFL draft magazine. And so I am pleased to have been a contributor to that here for the last 10, 12 years now. And so very proud of that written publication, and as well as the podcast. I am fortunate to work with a man named Corbin Smith on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, which of course, again, is in my backyard. And so I get an opportunity to talk specifically Seattle Seahawks when I can. But again, the reason why some of your listeners might be wanting to hear my opinion is just because of the NFL draft perspective that I've been able to provide for the years. And, people sometimes will say draft expert. I think the draft experts are the 32 different general managers in the NFL. I try to break down the draft, and I just like watching ball, Ed. I try to, evaluate these players and try to not only use my own eyes to try to anticipate who is going to be successful in the NFL, but also try to bring some perspective. I've been doing this for long enough time to see that there are some traits that really do project well in the NFL, and some that just look good on highlight reels, but that if the player doesn't have the physical tough and the durability, then they're not likely to last very long in the league. And so I try to bring a little bit of everything to the equation.
Well, we love talking to people who are smarter about these things than we are. So I really appreciate it, Rob. And, let's not make it years before you come back on the show.
I absolutely guarantee it. At any time you need anything, feel free to send me an email. We'll make it happen, sir.
All right, Rob, thank you. Giants fans, thank you very, very much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.